This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Most of what you listen to on this radio station constitutes journalism. There are different forms. Morning Edition is different from Lake Effect, which is different from Here and Now. But at the heart of what we all do as reporters and producers is a set of ethics. Those ethics include what we provide our listeners and how we treat other journalists and media outlets. But do you think of yourself as a journalist? Kelly McBride argues it's time for all of us to start thinking of media ethics, whether we're hosting a radio show or posting a video to YouTube. McBride is a senior faculty member in ethics reporting and writing at the Poynter Institute, a training and education center for journalists in Florida, and she's one of the nation's leading voices on media ethics issues. McBride was in Milwaukee this week to talk about ethics for an audience at Marquette University. Before that, she spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke about how the sheer number of journalists in the 21st century affects the nature of media ethics.
I think there's something fundamentally different. We are living in a world now where the consumers of information are also creators of information. So it's not just that some of us can be journalists. We can all be journalists. And the thing about that is it means that the audience changes its ideas about what it finds valuable. So, I mean, and this is just one little example. It used to be that independence was really valuable to the audience, independence in the voice of the information provider. And that's because there were so few information providers. In any given city, there was a couple of newspapers and maybe a radio station and then later on television. But really, you could count them on one hand in most cities. And so in that case, when you only had five reliable sources of information, you wanted those sources to be neutral. You wanted them to be independent because if they weren't, they were likely to skew the way democracy worked. Well, these days, you have millions of sources of information. And so independence isn't nearly as important to the audience as it used to be. Now, transparency is way more important. People aren't necessarily concerned if you have a dog in the fight or if you're taking sides, but they want to know that information ahead of time.
Does that change what the ethics are, or does it change what the questions about the ethics are? I mean, I guess do ethics exist in a vacuum, or are they determined by the consumers of this stuff?
Well, I mean, I think you're talking about two sides of the same coin here, really. Because journalism is an unlicensed profession, we don't determine our ethics in some ivory tower and then impose them on everybody who holds the license the way accountants and doctors and lawyers do. Instead, we look to see what the audience finds useful, and we try and articulate those best practices and import them back into the practitioners. So it's really a ground-up system of ethics. And let me say, there's another factor here, and that's the business concerns. Because the business concerns determine our ethics almost as much as the audience does. And even for that independence example that I just used, it was mutually beneficial to the business side of journalism to be independent. If you could aggregate a wide audience, then you could sell that audience to an advertiser. Now that the economic models are crumbling in journalism, that's another pressure that's changing our ethical considerations.
So this is the idea that there are some advertisers who would seek to be associated with an outlet that has a particular bent one way or the other.
Right. I mean, that was one idea. But the reality is now that advertising just isn't working the same way it used to. Advertising is no longer looking for the widest possible audience. They're looking for the most engaged audience. And that means different things to different advertisers. It means different things on different platforms. And so the changes in the economic model, that's changing how we describe our mission as journalists as much as the technological changes in the audience habits changing as well.
Are there things about ethics that haven't changed? Are there fundamental parts of what it is to be a journalist that really are exactly the same in 2014 as they were in 1914?
Well, sure. Let's start with telling the truth, right? Like, that's pretty important. and that was always part of the fundamental ethical principles of every journalism code that I've ever seen, those that I've participated in writing. And that tends to be the first principle always, always, always. Seek the truth and report it as fully as possible. That's one way of articulating it. Tell the truth. And to the extent that we can find these other pressures causing journalism organizations to not tell the truth or to distort the truth, I'm very comfortable saying, you know what, that's unethical. When your business pressures cause you to distort the truth, when your desire to please the audience causes you to distort the truth, or when your conception of fairness or equivalency so this actually happens all the time where you'll have a journalist say, well, I got to get both sides of this issue. But both sides may not be equal. There may be facts on one side and not on the other. And you don't have to treat those as both equal. Global warming is the classic example where journalists are finally coming to terms with the idea that there's actual science on this issue and that you need to pay attention to that science and that you can't allow a weatherman to go up against a climate change expert.
I wonder also if because there are so many more outlets than there once were, so many more people who think of themselves as journalists, are the ethics of how we work within the industry, how we treat each other as journalists, a greater part of the equation than they once were?
Yeah. I mean, I think what you're trying to describe is the media ecosystem. And it used to be that you had this this foundation of journalists who created the original content. And newspapers were at the very core of that foundation. So in cities all across the country, you had small and medium-sized newspapers that set the agenda of the topics of the day for the community. And radio and television stations tended to riff off the newspapers. Not always. Sometimes they sought their own stories, but often they reflected upon and amplified what the newspapers were already doing. And then you had these national organizations like the Associated Press and the New York Times and the broadcast television stations that sorted through all that local content and elevated some of it to national conversation. That's not what happens anymore. Now you have a smaller number of people creating original content, and you have even more people and organizations creating opinion based on that original content, and sometimes not based on that original content at all, sometimes just creating opinion. So we have a lot more opinion and commentary in the marketplace of ideas right now. We have fewer organizations and fewer individuals that are devoted to identifying and surfacing new facts and new information.
Do you get calls from the right people, do you think, as an ethics expert? I mean, are you really in a position where the kinds of journalists you work with are most of the way there simply because they're actually thinking in terms of ethics?
Well, I get a lot of calls. So But I certainly – my phone doesn't ring all day. If the right people were calling me for advice, I wouldn't be able to handle it because every decision that a journalist makes is an ethical decision. It has ethical implications. And for the most part, I think that journalists and journalism organizations have a pretty good understanding of what their mission is and how they serve that mission in an ethical way. However, I think that – most news organizations are operating on a much faster clip than they used to. And so they occasionally forget to think about things because they're moving so fast. And the business pressures are challenging news organizations to find new sources of revenue. And sometimes they don't think all the way through it. You know, so we had an example. Native advertising is a big, big news source of revenue. And this is where a news organization creates content that looks and smells and acts like it's regular content, but it's somehow branded sponsored content or native advertising. The Atlantic did this with a piece for the Church of Scientology, and the audience went nuts because they felt like it wasn't transparent enough, and that particular topic was so controversial that they didn't appreciate the Atlantic, which is a very good journalistic organization, allowing an advertiser to create something that felt like a dupe. It felt like they were tricking the audience. So that's one example. And I think that news organizations are dealing with big and small pressures like that every single day. And for the most part, they don't have to call me. They don't have to call an ethics expert. But what they do have to do is stop and ask questions about what they're doing and how that reflects their core set of values.
Well, and as you said, this is not a case where ethics are created in this ivory tower and are policed by some absolute authority. Do you think – is it a good thing that we as consumers of media are the ultimate police of ethical considerations in what we consume?
Well, it's a very democratic thing, right? I mean, we live in a country that has a First Amendment that guarantees the right to a free press. And what that really means is that you can publish any idea at all into the marketplace of ideas, and your right to do that is guaranteed. So we have remedies for when that becomes harmful in the civil courts, and we have very few restrictions when publishing something can cause great harm to society, like shouting fire in a theater or something like that. But for the most part, we live in this world that allows that. And the benefits of that, the democratic benefits of that, I believe far outweigh all of the harmful manifestations that we are experiencing now. And you have to remember that amendment was written at a time when the press was crazy irresponsible. I mean, they were publishing things that were patently false and biased and carrying hidden political agendas. And so that speech was meant to be protected. Bad speech is as protected as good speech. And so that's the world that we live in. Now, if we really want democracy to thrive, that means that we – because if you go back to – consumers are also creators of content. That means that all of us citizens now have some sort of responsibility to develop a set of news literacy skills and to be responsible in what we publish and what we distribute. So that means, you know, the crazy stuff you pass along on your Facebook page or the crazy emails that you send along. You have the same obligation that the professional journalist has to be responsible with that information.
Even if we don't think right off the bat what we're doing is journalism, we actually are committing acts of journalism.
Absolutely. And an act of journalism, it's really hard to define who is a journalist these days. In fact, I can't do it. I've tried and I can't do it. I can tell you who gets a paycheck for doing journalism, but I can't tell you who a journalist is. And that's because sometimes we create content that acts as journalism. And by acting as journalism, what I mean is the information allows others to fulfill their civic duties, to understand their communities, to understand an issue, or to carry out their democratic obligations.
Even if we don't necessarily think of what we're doing as journalism, other people are treating it that way. And so this is something that ought to be on our minds when we post something to YouTube.
Right, right. And I mean, the other thing is that we actually have developed a pretty good sorting system right now. I once posted a picture of an alligator, right? So I live in Florida and I posted a picture of an alligator that I believed to be a 28-foot alligator. And that was the story that I posted underneath it. And it was a matter of seconds before the people on my Facebook page pointed out that was undoubtedly fake. And they linked to the Snopes site that examined the photo and verified that it was fake. And then they pointed out to me that, like, alligators only get to be 15 feet tops, you know, that 28 feet was a little ridiculous and I maybe was spending too much time at Disney World. So I don't think we have to bear all this responsibility by ourselves, although it's important to keep these duties and obligations in mind. But we have each other to help us out. And that's actually what happens in newsrooms, right? Like you don't expect one person to bear the entire burden of telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. It's a communal effort. And so we do need to think about this both individually and as a community.
If only we could send our Facebook posts through a group of fact checkers before they went up.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is you can, but it's after they go up.
Kelly McBride, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Kelly McBride is a senior faculty member in ethics, reporting, and writing at the Poynter Institute in Florida. She's also co-editor of the recent book, The New Ethics of Journalism, Principles for the 21st Century. She spoke with Mitch Teich this week while she was in Milwaukee to give the Burlai Media Ethics Lecture at Marquette University. Coming up next on Lake Effect, Big Brother is watching you. Or perhaps we should say Big Brothers. From governments to corporations, there isn't much privacy out there anymore. Well, the ACLU is working to reverse that, and we'll talk with one of its senior analysts next. You're listening to us on WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.